welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. I am Jason Powell. I called an audible today. Normally, I would be reading you my WWE Raw hit list and running through some bonus thoughts on Raw. However, with the Daniel Bryan retirement announcement, I thought this would be a good time to give you guys the entire Raw audio review. This is normally available exclusively to members. Once in a while, we'll put it out there as an All Access as we are today. I'm going to say right off the bat, I'm not going to get into who wasn't thanked by Daniel Bryan and kind of analyzing certain things. And there's plenty of time to get into that. But I do want to start off. Normally I'd read through the report from start to finish, but in this case, I think given the circumstances, I think we should start with the whole Daniel Bryan situation. I will say that the show was in Seattle, Washington at Key Arena, which is Daniel Bryan country, and this was one great crowd as far as Daniel Bryan is concerned, really treating him like the hometown hero that he is and giving him a tremendous send-off. And, you know, with Daniel Bryan, the thing that just came across as I was watching this is that I don't know Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson. I think I may have shook his hand once at a Ring of Honor show, and that was probably the extent of it. But after talking with so many people about this guy now over the years, you might find someone. You can find a veteran who will critique certain things that they didn't quite understand the Daniel Bryan phenomenon. We saw a lot of that. We still get some of it with older wrestlers who just don't quite get how this guy of Daniel Bryan's stature was able to go out there and accomplish what he did. So you can find people that can criticize aspects of his game, if you will. I mean, I think he's one of the greatest in-ring wrestlers of all time. I mean, the guy's just tremendous at what he does. But you can certainly find people in the industry that will find flaws with certain things. Whether they're accurate assessments or not is up to individual interpretation. But the one thing I have never been able to find is someone who said, yeah, that Daniel Bryan guy, what a jerk. You know, not once. And this is an industry where it's so hard to come up with a list of names where people don't have a negative story. They don't have, he's not a bad guy, but, or, some horror story about the guy, or, there's just nothing. I've just never heard it. And I'm not saying I won't encounter someone someday who had a bad Daniel Bryan experience, caught him on a bad day or whatever. I just think this guy is just a genuinely good person. And, as I'm watching this, his retirement speech tonight, it really hit me. It's like, I think to some extent we're probably all guilty in life of trying to say the right thing at times. With Daniel Bryan, and some are more guilty of it than others, that's for sure. But with Daniel Bryan, I think it seems natural because it is when it comes to him saying the right things. I just think that he really came across like a good person. And under so many other circumstances, if this were so many different people in the industry, I'd be pretty skeptical going, But when it comes to Daniel Bryan and just hearing so many positive things about this guy from so many people throughout his career, it's just easy to let the guard down and feel like, and just take it in and feel like what this guy is telling you is the truth. And because he does come across so genuine. And so that was a thing that really grabbed me. Really throughout this guy's career, but certainly tonight it hit home. And when he walked backstage, I couldn't help but feel like, there goes everything good about the wrestling industry all combined into one person, and not that there's no good left in the industry. I'm not saying that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that this guy encapsulated what was so right about the pro wrestling industry, his story, just overcoming the odds of a guy his stature, overcoming really just a generic look. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The first time I saw Daniel Bryan, I was like, ooh, very good worker, but I don't know how far he's going to go in this industry. And then even when he got to WWE, it was certainly like, we've seen how good this guy can be. I just don't know if Vince McMahon is ever going to get it. And I don't know that Vince McMahon ever did truly get it, but the fans basically, and through Daniel Bryan's ability, just made this happen, gave him that storybook ending at WrestleMania where he won the World Heavyweight Championship, a match that wasn't supposed to happen, of course, because Vince McMahon had Batista and Randy Orton set as a WrestleMania main event, and the fans just weren't having it, and they dictated. You know, he talked about the Seattle crowd hijacking Raw that night. Really, WWE fans hijacked WWE and made that match happen. And so, I mean, a very special thing that may never happen again. You know, I mean, you hope that WWE is a little more on the ball for one thing, but who's to say there's going to be this level of just unbridled passion for a guy like Daniel Bryan, who has just such a tremendous story. Is some of it right place, right time? Well, maybe. You know, I mean, if he comes along in the 80s, when the era of the giant wrestlers and the muscular wrestlers, I don't know how successful he would have been. Maybe he would have found a niche somewhere. But, I mean, just overall, one of the most hardworking, genuine people is what so many people have had to say about him, and using different words over the years. Those are the things that stand out. And this, you know, take it from whether you're a sports fan or not, take it from someone who is. I've seen a lot of retirement speeches over the years. If you're a longtime fan, you've seen pro wrestling retirement speeches, some very memorable ones from Edge and Ric Flair. This one, I really struggle to think of another retirement speech from any genre that grabbed me the way this one did. And it wasn't, you know, I really expected it to be, get the tissues ready. You know, it's going to be one of those nights. And yeah, there were certainly times he got choked up. I mean, certainly when he was talking about his late father and pointing out where he sat the last time that he watched him perform. It was certain, you know, I mean, I think everyone got a little choked up at that point, but he kept it light. You know, he would get you to the point where you're on the verge, and maybe I'm sure some of you did end up tearing up and maybe outright crying. There were people in the crowd who were crying before he even made it to the ring, you know, and so, but I just think he did such a nice job of never letting it just become a completely somber occasion. And he, you know, if anyone had a right to do that, I would say it's him, given the circumstances. Edge, the same thing. But, you know, Edge did a tremendous job, and Daniel Bryan just kept working in his sense of humor and his positive outlook. And so it just, he really connected with fans one more time. And I as I wrote my review, I don't think I've ever seen him more at ease in front of a camera with a microphone in his hand. You know, he wasn't out there. I'm sure, you know, he's had time to think about this. And, you know, it sounds like the final decision was made fairly recently here based on some recent tests that he had done. But so I'm sure he's had time to think about this. And I'm sure there are things he wanted to say. But I felt like I was listening to a guy just spill his guts, being himself. You know, may have had an outline, but it wasn't like he was trying to remember word for word this promo or this speech that was manufactured for him. This was a guy who knew what he wanted to say and came out there and said it in his own way and looked so at ease doing it. And just a very special moment. Raw going, 20-some minutes over tonight. One of the longer overruns you'll see from Raw, and completely worth it. They did go over to WWE Network as well to show him leaving, going up to the stage where Vince McMahon, the McMahon family, and the locker room, all the wrestlers were standing there, and just showing him head backstage. He did stop and had a hug with Vince McMahon. I'll just say this. It looked like, I said I wasn't going to get into too much of this tonight. I'm sure we will at some point, not tonight. But it did look like Vince wanted that hug to go a little bit longer than maybe Daniel Bryan wanted it to. And maybe that's just my observation. But no, I thought it was such a fitting end to an amazing career. And I'm happy WWE gave him the opportunity to do that. I'm happy that he seems to be at peace with his career as much as you can be, given how much he loves this industry and how much he loves wrestling. He seems to have accepted it. I don't know if it is just getting that final assessment, the bad news that he talked about in his recent round of tests. That just, you know, made the light bulb go off. Like, okay, I'm choosing my long-term health over this, and it is time to step aside. And you know, I'm hoping we hear more from Daniel Bryan in the days ahead. I hope that people get a chance to ask him some good questions about this. But if not, if he just wants to go off for a while and or maybe permanently, I don't think he'll be that type. I think we don't know what's next for Daniel Bryan. Is he going to continue to work for WWE? There was no indication from his speech that this was a send-off for Daniel Bryan, but Bryan Danielson is returning to the ring. I didn't take that away at all. And again, we'll get into more of that, I'm sure, in the days ahead. But just a wonderful speech, and certainly one of the more memorable moments on Raw in a long time. I mean, certainly just a tremendous job by Daniel Bryan. The live crowd that was there, just so supportive. And I can't say enough good things about this. This is as sad as the whole concussion aspect is, as frightening as that aspect is in pro wrestling today and all of sports. It's still this, putting that aside, just the way he went out saying the things he did made you feel good about being a wrestling fan. It didn't make you feel bad about all the things that have happened with the concussions over the years, at least for now. You know, there's a lot of time to sit back and analyze that and discuss that more in detail. But for tonight, I don't know about you, I ended Raw feeling like, good for him. You know, it's not what he wants, but this is a guy that I think is going to be okay. Whatever that next chapter is, he looks like he's ready for it. Edge was ready for it. I don't think Ric Flair certainly wasn't. That wasn't what he wanted to do. But Edge was ready for it. He seems happier than hell, you know, whenever he's interviewed. And I don't know what his personal life is like, but he comes off like a guy who is so happy, just life outside of wrestling. And I really hope Daniel Bryan finds that. I don't even know if I'm going to go through word for word and all of that. We may get back to it later, you know, as we work our way through this. You can check out my live review of the show. I'm not going to say there's not some typos in there. I'm guessing there are because I was really scrambling to keep up with everything that was said, but I think I did. I'll give myself a pat on the back. I think I did a pretty good job of getting just about everything that Daniel Bryan had to say. And rather than go through all of that, if for any reason you didn't see the retirement, I'll direct you to that at prowrestling.net, or for that matter, I'm guessing you'll be able to find video footage of this. I'd be surprised if WWE doesn't release this. You definitely should see this one for yourself. He did a great job. But let's talk about the rest of Raw. It was they opened up with a brief Daniel Bryan video package and did include his announcement via Twitter that he's retiring due to medical issues. And then we got the opening, and then Michael Cole, JBL, Byron Saxton on commentary. Stephanie McMahon stood in the ring, welcomed viewers to Raw, and talked about the contract signing that they were going to have. She was immediately interrupted, though, with the loud chants of Daniel Bryan. It was like, oh, no. Because it was like, the buzz was that they were going to save that for last, as they obviously did. And I wonder if at that point in the show, they're like, oh, man, maybe we made a mistake here. But shockingly, the live crowd was never... They never really went back to this in a major way. You know, I think there were some Bryan chants throughout the night, but this was the one time where it was like they interrupted Stephanie McMahon. They interrupted somebody's promo or something like that with Daniel Bryan chants, and she let them do their thing for a little bit, and she said, you guys are always confused in Seattle. The winner of the Fastlane main event will not go on to face Daniel Bryan. They're going to face my husband at WrestleMania. And this was interesting. She said, Hollywood might have Captain America against Iron Man and Batman versus Superman, but only WWE has Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose. She ended up being interrupted by Dean Ambrose's music. He wanted Lesnar out there. He really didn't care much about Stephanie, but he wanted Brock out there, called him an overgrown ape. Stephanie said that Ambrose doesn't tell her what to do. She tells him what to do. And she said there will be no physicality during the contract signing. Roman Reigns comes out, and basically he was all for Ambrose getting his hands on Lesnar. And Stephanie asked Ambrose if he noticed that whenever he has a moment, Roman is there to steal the spotlight. I like that. Just a quick little line. There was no big, it wasn't like there was some epiphany for Ambrose at that moment. It's just, once again, Stephanie trying to stir the pot, trying to cause issues between the two. And so far, both characters have come off intelligent enough that they're not buying into it. They may self-destruct, but it's going to be because of something that happens with them. It's not because Stephanie is pushing the buttons, is how I'm reading this so far. Stephanie ends up introducing Brock Lesnar. He ends up making his entrance along with Paul Heyman. Heyman was about to introduce himself, but Stephanie said, "Yeah, we know your name." The crowd booed that. They wanted the introduction, which I thought was cool. And then Ambrose, he was the first. They all quickly signed the contract. Lesnar was last to sign it, and he handed it back to Stephanie and said that she said, "My business is done here," and she left the ring. And so that left the three of them, well, the three wrestlers and Paul Heyman. And Heyman suggested that Reigns explain to Ambrose the difference between a beatdown by the authority and an authoritative beatdown by Brock Lesnar. And Ambrose got in Brock's face, and he was quickly thrown over the table that was used for the contract signing and into Roman Reigns. And then Lesnar picked up the table, threw it at Reigns, and then he performed the F5 on Ambrose and left the ring. And he and Heyman were kind of looking back, admiring their handiwork when Triple H's music played. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Nothing. He just came out with the title belt. Didn't say a word. Never heard from him all night. He just stood there and kind of surveyed everything. They wanted that shot of the three contenders and Triple H all out there together. So not much from Triple H. It's been kind of rather, I'm just kind of let down so far. I mean, we got the one big gloating promo the night after the Royal Rumble, but since then, it's just been pretty tame as far as Hunter. We've heard more from Stephanie than we have Hunter. Maybe it's just because there's not much to say. I mean, there's only so many times you can gloat about outsmarting everyone and being the champion when you're not actually wrestling. And so I would assume that once we get through Fastlane, we're going to start hearing a lot more from Hunter, obviously, as they build up to the WrestleMania match. They did this throughout the night. They were showing tweets from various WWE personalities and that were regarding Daniel Bryan's retirement. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get through all of them here, but they did that throughout the course of the night. And they also aired footage from different points in his career. At this point, it was his debut on the then-awful NXT show. If any of you are newer fans, you figure out where the good NXT started. Don't go back and watch that abomination. I mean, there isn't some good in here. For instance, the Chris Jericho and Daniel Bryan match on the first match that Bryan had on NXT was definitely one of the probably the highlight of NXT. I try to erase most of it from my memory, but I remember that one, and I remember a couple of other moments, but all of the negatives in there. Yeah, don't think like, well, I'll just start from the beginning of NXT. I assume they still have that bad game show version of it listed in, as part of the NXT thing on the network. I should actually look. I wonder if they started at the right time. Like, no, it's a promotion now. It's not some awful next evolution of television, as Vince McMahon called it, reality show, or whatever the hell that was supposed to be. I guess it was like one part game show. I don't know. I've given up. I can't even put into words what I think their vision for this thing was. After commercial break, we got a recap, and then we got the opening match of the night. Dolph Ziggler beat Kevin Owens in 11 minutes. This time, Dolph ended up putting his feet on the ropes for leverage, and the referee made the three count. The referee, not seeing Dolph, had his feet on the ropes. So Ziggler has beat Owens in back-to-back matches now on Raw. I mean, I still think Owens, he's losing these little battles, but he wins the war. I don't think he's going to lose a feud to Dolph Ziggler. At the same time, I can't get behind this. I just think that Kevin Owens is so valuable right now in a company that is really struggling to get meaningful heels in position. I mean, they've obviously, New Day is what New Day is, but I don't see them as being money heels. I don't think people get excited when they see New Day is going to wrestle Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, as we saw last week. It's just kind of awkward because they're comedic. They have real value in other ways, but they're not those main event showdown type heels. I think they've wanted League of Nations to be that. They're not. Hell, there's a reason Triple H is the champion, aside from, well, he wants to headline WrestleMania, because they don't have strong heels. But there's also a reason, and that's because they have guys like Kevin Owens who they could do something with, or at least a guy like Owens, and they fail. You know, they're not even, I don't feel like they're trying. And so maybe this works out in the long run, we look back on it and go, you know, it wasn't so bad for Owens. But if nothing else, right now, it doesn't feel like they're setting him up for something big at WrestleMania. I've said that I think you can make Owens, that you can make, if you need someone, let's say they were going to go with Cena and Undertaker, and I know they were going to at one point. If Cena's not going to be back in time, and they didn't know what to do with Taker, I'd say Owens would be the guy because he can be the guy that just disrespects Taker and do it in a believable way and make people want to see Taker get his hands on him. And that doesn't look like that's happening. There's just I don't know what they're doing with Kevin Owens, but there's I Dolph Ziggler just kind of he yes he was like third in best wrestler voting in the 2014 poll at .net. But I just think fans have kind of given up and moving on. And I mean, is it too late for Ziggler completely? Well, no, but do I think like this is doing Kevin Owens any good? Absolutely not. And I don't think like this is what you should be doing with Kevin Owens when you just have such a need for heels heading into your biggest show of the year. Hopefully he comes out of this okay. I don't think it's doing major damage, but it's just he's not in that position that I think he should be in right now. We got some hype for the rest of the show. We got footage of Daniel Bryan beating The Miz to win the U.S. title at Night of Champions 2010. And they went to a commercial from there. And then it was backstage with the Dudleys telling the Uso brothers that, the table match is kind of their thing and they should be the ones facing New Day. Uso brothers had respect for the Dudleys, but hey, it's their match. And Bubba suggested they all team up to face New Day. And the Uso said, hey, that'd be cool if we can get it approved. And then we went to a Ryback video package, which you'd think, okay, so it must be Ryback Showcase night. And it wasn't. We found out that he'd be facing Bray Wyatt later in the show, so we'll get to it at that point. We got Charlotte and Ric Flair making their entrance, and they went to a commercial break. They did announce, though, that Charlotte versus Brie Bella for the Divas Championship at Fastlane is official. I know the other match they announced is the other one I speculated on in this Daily Audio podcast. The tag match wasn't that hard to figure out, I don't think. It was just a question of whether they would do it on television or save it for the Fastlane show, and it's going to be Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks against Naomi and Tamina. But the second match coming out of the break was Charlotte beating Alicia Fox in a non-title match in 5 minutes. Not much to this. I mean, she won by submission with the figure eight, and it was competitive. It wasn't like it was just all Charlotte, but I like that we're seeing Charlotte actually get some wins on television. They didn't do this when she was the new babyface champion. When she won that title, it seemed like, hey, you really put her over strong and you make her seem like this sensation. And they never did. It was weird. If you recall, they were focusing on so many other people, but now it seems like she's getting some. Yeah, I mean, she's lost non-title matches too, but I think it's important that they show the champion winning from time to time on Raw, and it looks like they're doing more of that with Charlotte. We got Miz checking out his teeth in the mirror backstage. Cole said that he had a couple of teeth knocked out by AJ Styles during that match on SmackDown, and when they showed it later, yes, he did. They went to a commercial. When they came back, it was a little bit of hype, and then it was time for Miz TV. However, it became the highlight reel with Chris Jericho. Jericho was the guest. He basically had the crew completely turn it over from the Miz TV set to the highlight reel set. Had them bring his plant that Dean Ambrose gave him. The plant survived. It's still alive. I guess they're bringing this thing from town to town. Now somebody might look and go, no, it's a different plant. But I'm going to go with it survived all this, and it keeps surviving all the chaos in the ring, too. So no matter what happens, that plant still seems to survive whatever goes on the highlight reel. Good for that plant. And of course, Miz wasn't happy about having the show hijacked by Jericho, but Jericho did set up the footage of Styles knocking out his tooth, or at least they said teeth. I saw one fly. I mean, I'm guessing he probably did have two knocked out, but you could definitely see the one fly. It was like a spinning back fist, I think it was, that AJ threw at him. And man, whew. Wow. But Miz was then boasting about how he had two veneers that were knocked out of his mouth and it cost him $10,000 each. But he had a meeting with Steven Spielberg. That's where the boasting came in. He had that scheduled, and his dental team was able to do emergency bridge work. He's going on and on about this. And Jericho said the Chipmunk, something about the Chipmunk song, "All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth," he couldn't get out of his head. So they go back and forth for a little bit, with Miz reminding Jericho that he also lost to AJ Styles, and they showed footage of AJ's Raw debut. And they did a little bit of hype, of course, for the SmackDown match that they're having at tomorrow's taping, if anyone is going to be there in Portland. We are looking for correspondents, dotnetjason@gmail.com. If you can help us out, we'd really appreciate it. AJ then came out, and as he was posing on the stage, Miz attacked Jericho from behind, put the boots to him. That's when Styles ran in and attacked Miz, threw him toward Jericho, who then clotheslined him. And then Jericho and Styles had this face-off, and they had to clear Miz from the ring again. And then Jericho shoved Styles from behind after that, and they had another stare down. And then Styles poked Jericho a little bit, a couple times in the chest, as he was talking at, you know, kind of jawing at him. And then Jericho slapped the hand away. Styles punches Jericho, and they end up exchanging blows. Miz reaches up from ringside and pulls Jericho to the floor, and then Jericho quickly recovered by kicking Miz and tossing him over the broadcast table. And then Jericho got back. He's getting back inside the ring anyway, and then stayed down on the floor and was kind of jawing a little bit with Styles from there. And the crowd was booing a little bit because they wanted to see this continue. I really liked, not to, it wasn't so much the segment that I like as much as it is that there's some real hype for a SmackDown match for a change. It was so nice to see them announce a match on SmackDown next week, not for Raw, but actually announce a match for the following week's SmackDown that wasn't just some throwaway match that nobody cared about. It's AJ Styles and Chris Jericho. And then they followed up on Raw by actually doing the same. How many times have you seen WWE, the most hype they do is, here's your graphic for Miz TV, or here's your graphic for the highlight reel, or here's your graphic for some match that we're going to change before we actually tape the show. I mean, it's been embarrassing. They've gotten a little bit better when it comes to doing it on SmackDown, but they took it another step here. They've been just announcing 2-3 matches, or a highlight reel segment or something like that, and with little more than the graphic. It hasn't been that great of hype. And hopefully this isn't just for Styles Jericho. Hopefully they've seen the light on this and they intend to do more. But if nothing else, enjoy it while it lasts. Then we ended up with another clip of Daniel Bryan winning Money in the Bank. And at the 2011 event, they went to a commercial. When they came back, Bray Wyatt beat Ryback in 6:50. If you saw SmackDown, Ryback was definitely Ryberg. He had all black, and I mean he was Goldberg. This time, I mean, he still has a similar look, but he got the, at least he had like his different colored trunks, and they had "big guy" written on the back, which is kind of corny if you ask me. But still, at least he doesn't look exactly like Goldberg now. There's still going to be, well, and there was some Ryberg chance. But it, again, it's not as bad as it was. Ryback went for a meat hook clothesline, but it was Wyatt catching him and performing Sister Abigail on him for the win. So Ryback loses in 6:50. You know, I mean, I kind of laughed earlier about them showing that Ryback video, but I think I said recently, you know, I don't mind when they do things like that because it adds a little bit of mystery to the match. If it's just, well, here comes Ryback with little fanfare and here comes Wyatt and it's all about Wyatt, well, you know who's going to win. I don't know if it really helped it that much in this case, but some of it is just because I'm really down on the Wyatt family. It's not them, it's how the way they've been utilized. And yeah, it's that time of year where somebody needs an opponent. Maybe it's Brock Lesnar, who knows? You know, I mean, we've seen them do it with John Cena, we've seen them do it with Undertaker. They need opponents. Let's build up Bray Wyatt, and then we'll just feed him to that person, and he's right back where he started. And until they show me that that's not the formula again this year, I'm just having a hard time getting excited about them. They need these guys. Just like everything I said about Kevin Owens, apply to these guys too. But and yes, they're winning. Bray Wyatt is winning more than he usually does. But again, if the end result is going to be, well, he just put somebody over at Mania in a kind of a predictable way, what good really occurs then? It's just they kind of get themselves through a Mania match, but I don't think it's one that people are going to be eagerly anticipating because I'm not the only one who's picked up on this, that's for sure. I think people just see through it now. They did have the rest of the Wyatt family perform moves on Ryback after the match, too. So the Wyatt family beating up Ryback, and no one caring enough to come out and help Ryback. They had a video package on Team Hell No, Daniel Bryan and Kane, and which you had to have there, for sure. That was a fun part of Daniel Bryan's run. I think I probably spent half the time going, get him out of this and do more with the guy. But it was still a lot of fun, looking back on it especially. Then the broadcast team acknowledged more tweets that regarding Daniel Bryan, including Vince McMahon, Paige, Kalisto, and Dana Warrior. Then backstage, New Day, they were working on a table because of the table match. Big E was singing about the table, and Renee Young asked him about the match being an 8-man tag, and Big E said they haven't found a partner yet, but they will. Kingston said they're like the Broncos and that they're champions and everyone loves them. I think they thought, like, mentioning the Broncos was going to get a lot of boos from the Seattle crowd, And from based on what I could tell, it there wasn't a lot of it wasn't like the type of heat that I think they were expecting. I think there were some cheers in there. Now, at one point, when Seattle was in Denver's division, as they were for many years, yeah, there was a rivalry. And now, keep in mind, Carolina beat, for those who don't follow the NFL, Carolina beat Seattle to go to the Super Bowl. So I know what that's like when you may not care about the team that is playing in the Super Bowl, but you want them to beat the team that beat your team to get to the Super Bowl, that kind of a thing. And so I think there's a lot of that going on where I think it kind of just, I don't know if it really backfired, but they just didn't get the desired effect. Backstage, Roman Reigns approached Dean Ambrose, who was pretty worked up, and he said he didn't care if he takes another F5. He's going after Lesnar. Reigns like, well, I'm not trying to talk you out of it. You should go get him. And then Ambrose said he doesn't need his help. Or no, he said they should go get him together. That's what it was. And Ambrose said he doesn't need his help because Lesnar is his. And Reigns told him, give him hell. What's kind of weird that, yeah, let's go get him together. Your top babyface is like, let's go beat up one guy, the two of us. That was, you stop and think about it, a little strange. They go to a commercial when they come back. Social outcasts make their entrance. Why is this happening? Why, I did Vince McMahon miss 3MB that much that he brought them back, took away the air guitars, and gave them a fourth guy? It's not good. I wanted to like this so bad, I just can't get behind it. It was Adam Rose, though, beating Titus O'Neil in 3:20. This occurred only because there was a distraction, which was kind of, I think we had three matches where there was some distraction that led to a pin tonight. This was one of them. It was Slater getting up on the apron and being cleared from the apron, and Rose rolling up Titus from that and getting the win. Comically bad spot in this match. There was a point where Slater was going to be clotheslined off of the apron. I think it was actually that at that point. I think it was at the finish. And he throws his arm for the clothesline. Slater's already turning toward the floor and looking down at the floor. And so he's like sideways when he gets hit with his clothesline. If you have it on the DVR, it's not the funniest thing you'll ever see, but it was pretty damn funny. I got a kick out of it. We got more Daniel Bryan footage this time, him beating John Cena to win the WWE Championship at SummerSlam 2013, and they went to a commercial. Then we got a Black History Month segment. We had some still shot photos of Ernie Ladd, Sailor Art, Thomas Bober, Brazil, Bearcat Wright, Rocky Johnson, Tony Atlas, Sweet Daddy Siki, Junkyard Dog, Sonny King, and Ron Simmons. Dean Ambrose made his entrance, and he was basically goading Lesnar, talking about must have hit him with an F2 or an F3 because he thought the F5 was supposed to hurt and keep him down, but it didn't. And he said Lesnar can't get the job done. Challenged him to come on out, try again, and put some stank on it. And JBL said he's never heard anyone talk to Brock Lesnar like this. He still didn't come out. Ambrose said Hunter was right. He's gone soft. He said it kind of sounds like a personal problem, and he asked if Brock couldn't get it up for the big fight. And Ambrose assumed Heyman didn't give Lesnar permission. And he said he knew Heyman was Lesnar's advocate, but he didn't know he held his balls too. And then Lesnar and Heyman finally come out, and Lesnar's still smiling, as he always does at Ambrose, kind of like, you believe this guy? That kind of a smile. And then he, but Ambrose came out and met him at ringside. Lesnar quickly puts him down, and Lesnar ran Ambrose into the edge of the ring, threw knees at him, and then whipped him into the barricade. He rolled Ambrose inside the ring, clotheslined him. Dean stands up. Lesnar's right there to knock him down with another clothesline, and then again with another F5. And then Brock's music played, and he left the ring with Heyman. In the ring, that well, actually, no, he didn't leave the ring. I think I got ahead of myself in my live review. Ambrose rolled to his side. Oh, actually, he did. He rolled to the side and was looking at Lesnar, who turned and looked back to find Ambrose motioning for Lesnar to return. That's what it was. So, yeah, he did leave, and Ambrose is like, come on back. And Brock then goes back to the ring and was about to pick up Ambrose again when Roman's music hits, and that just stopped Brock in his tracks. Reigns actually walked out on the stage. You don't see that very often, which is good here because was he just hanging out in the concourse for the hell of it? So, yeah, it made sense. And then he headed to the ring, and Ambrose, though, sat up before Roman could even get there and low-blowed Lesnar, who sold it big time. He was not Iron Balls Torpedo from the Jerk. Reigns smiled at ringside, and then Ambrose stumbled around to sell the beating, and Ambrose walked by Reigns and kind of appeared to tell him, I think he, something along the lines of, hey, I told you I didn't need your help. And then he fell onto the ramp, and Reigns was smiling as he was standing in kind of a good-for-him kind of way as he was standing over Ambrose. So I think tonight was good for Lesnar. Yeah, the last time I think you saw him was taking a low blow. But he looked so dominant in that opening segment. It was just it was fury. You know, I mean, he's just destroying those guys. He just immediately going after Ambrose, throwing him, you know, into or throwing I think Ambrose into Reigns, was it, and the table into Reigns as well. I mean, it was just Brock destroying things, including people and tables early on, and it was great. We need this from Brock Lesnar. They've kind of lately they haven't positioned him as strong as they usually do, and he's come off a little bit predictable. There hasn't been that, oh my God, what's going to happen when Brock Lesnar is out here feel. They need that. That is what makes Brock Lesnar work. And when they lose that, he's just another guy. We got a little bit of that back tonight. Yeah, so again, you see him take the low blow. Is it, I guess I didn't really, I asked myself the question, never came up with a good answer. The F5, you know, Ambrose taking that. Is it damaging to Lesnar that Ambrose takes this move and yeah, he's down, he's selling it, but he's still able to get back up? I guess, you know, the more I think about it, it's like I will understand criticism saying, "Boy, you're kind of hurting Brock." I think Ambrose is just kind of looking like a John Wayne type here. You know, he's taking a lot of abuse. He's not popping right up like it doesn't hurt him. That's the difference. He's taking it, and I mean, you could even say, "Well, the F5, it's a three count. It's all that Brock Lesnar needs to get." And Ambrose, I think, is down and he's weary and he's struggling. It's not like he popped up and beat up Brock Lesnar. He ended up low blowing him. So I think it came off okay. I think Ambrose looks tough. Lesnar started to look frustrated, which is okay. You know, Brock can be frustrated once in a while that he's not dominating someone, despite, you know, his character normally doing that. I'm just surprised that so much of this has been about Brock and Dean, and Reigns is just kind of that the extra. You know, he's just kind of the sidekick at this point. You know, Ambrose said he was usually a sidekick, but I mean, it just hasn't been the case until now. He's coming off that way. It's worth noting Brock not advertised for next week's Raw, at least yet. We'll see if that changes. He is advertised for next week's SmackDown. So they do have Raw and or SmackDown on tomorrow, aka and Thursday, and then when it airs Thursday, I should say, and then and next week's Raw to do more with Reigns and Ambrose if they want to create some tension there, and then we'll have one more on the Go Home edition of SmackDown with the three of them. I just, you know, I mean, you're running out of time to really make this about Reigns and Lesnar. That was your Mania main event last year. They're getting back in there. This should feel like a big deal. And no, it's just kind of been about Dean and Brock. They've spent so much time focused on that I think they're losing a little bit when it comes to how great Lesnar and Reigns was last year. I loved that match last year, and so I'm a little bit surprised by that. We got a commercial. And then when we came back, it was Alberto Del Rio and Rusev beating the Lucha Dragons in 5:30, sent Cara back from a shoulder injury over the weekend and made his Raw return here. It was a distraction, I know, shocking, from King Barrett, who was on the outside. Sheamus was not there. I guess they don't want to show Sheamus with a cast. He's got that, what is it, tendonitis, I think he's battling. So he had a cast on, at least at last check anyway. He put that out there on Twitter, and I assume he's still wearing it. I don't know. But no, Barrett ended up getting up on the ring apron, and that was all it took for Kalisto to be distracted, and then Del Rio hit him with that double stomp with Kalisto tied up in the ropes. And so he goes over. And hey, if Kalisto hadn't won the title, lost the title, and won the title again, let's say he had just won it in an upset, and they're building to the rematch, I'd say, hey, this is fine, you know, make him look a little vulnerable. But when they just keep trading wins, I just don't feel anything when one guy beats the other guy anymore. Like, whatever, let's just get to the pay-per-view and hopefully we move on from here. I'd love for this to feel like it's some big epic feud between Del Rio and Kalisto, but it just doesn't. I don't know what logic there was for the rapid-fire title changes. I still haven't figured out what they were thinking there. We went to a really awful segment. R-Truth was going to a Jimi Hendrix exhibit. It was by the Space Needle in Seattle, and he encountered Goldust, who was dressed like Jimi Hendrix, kinda. Not a very good Jimi Hendrix. And he had a guitar, and he was singing Jimi Hendrix songs. And then he said he was trying to show Truth what he's capable of as a tag partner. Yeah, because that's what I look for in a tag team partner, a guy who can do a really awful Jimi Hendrix impersonation. He smashed the guitar for some reason, said something about little Jimmy, I don't know. And then security dragged him away. I think the idea was like the guitar was valuable or something. I'm guessing, but I don't know what they were going for here. I never laughed once. I like Goldust. When truth, there's some truth humor that I get a kick out of. They're not doing anything for me with these skits. It's just not funny. Sasha Banks comes out. They go to well, and then they went to a video package for Daniel Bryan's Occupy Raw segment, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, that's when they made the announcement about the tag match at Fastlane, the Divas tag match, Banks and Lynch against Naomi Tamina, and then it was time for Tamina to defeat Becky Lynch in 3:50, and Sasha was on commentary. That's what she was doing there. We ended up with Tamina jawing with Sasha, and she stood up from commentary and was jawing back at her when Naomi walks over and punches Sasha, and then threw repeated punches at her and threw her into the ring steps. And this looked great. That first shot from Naomi, man, that looked great. Becky leaves the ring to fight off Naomi with a suplex on the floor, and then Becky returns to the ring and ends up running into a big boot from Tamina, who pinned her. So not exactly, well, I mean, yeah, she was distracting. But she was getting caught up in it. She didn't just look like a dope for turning her head slightly and then being blasted by a move like we saw earlier. But no, I like what they're doing with them. I still think they get back to Lynch and well, I think that we'll get back to Lynch and Sasha and Charlotte at Mania time. Who knows, though, with this Brie thing, maybe they want Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, and maybe that's the way to get him there, is to have this Brie thing continue, where she doesn't win it at Fastlane, but she does at Mania. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility, but if the idea is to kind of keep Becky and Sasha occupied for this month until they set up whatever they want to do with them at Mania, okay, it's fine. I'm digging it. We went backstage where New Day handed a unicorn horn to Mark Henry, who put it on his head, and then he played Xavier Woods' trombones pretty poorly. And Big E said, "The music's all good, but it's nothing without the moves." And so Woods then cringed because he had to play the trombone that Mark Henry just played, and Henry was dancing along with the other New Day members. I'm sure Vince McMahon was laughing his ass off at this. Yeah, it seems like it's something that Vince would love. After commercial, we got some more tweets. This time it was Nikki Bella, Kevin Owens, Natalya, and John Cena. And then it was tables match talk, followed by Byron Saxton going with the usual hype for SmackDown with the quick graphic and mention. But we got somewhat, you know, we actually got real hype earlier in the show. Looking forward to that. Jericho and Styles, the second match on SmackDown. I think that'll be fun. I just hope it's not it like, well, Miz is, this is why Miz is here, because he's going to get involved in this match. Wouldn't shock me. New Day end up coming out for the tables match and introduced Mark Henry as the world's strongest unicorn. And then he skipped and clapped as he joined them on the stage, and he had a unicorn horn, but he just had his normal gear on. I was really hoping for him to be wearing New Day colors. I know, kind of perverse. The match itself was the Dudleys and the Uso brothers beating New Day and Mark Henry in a tables match in 7:35. The babyfaces cleared New Day, and then all went after fellow babyface Mark Henry, hitting him with moves. I guess he's got it coming. Like, well, you're going to team with New Day, this is what you get. But he ended up walking out on them, and he was not happy with New Day, so he's still a babyface, I think. And then the babyfaces all did the what's up spot, which if you watch the Late Late Show after the Super Bowl, then with James Corden, then I think you'll get a kick out of it more than you usually do. If you're like me, you're like, man, that Budweiser commercial was a long time ago. But the fans always react to it. That's the thing. It's like, I want to just go, this is so dated and stupid, but the fans react to it. So, hey, if it's not dated and stupid to them, then God bless them. Do the move. But then they end up putting Big E through the table. After the match, one of the Uso brothers is selling a knee injury. Babyface teams are celebrating, and suddenly Bubba clotheslines one of the Usos, and then Devon clotheslines the other. And I say, I normally feel guilty when I tell you, when I can't determine between Jimmy and Jay, neither could Michael Cole. He was like, when one of the Usos was selling the knee injury, he said, I think he said, Jay, I think. He wasn't certain either. They ended up, based on what the announcers were saying, they put Jimmy Uso through a table. And then Jay continued, he was the one clutching his knee, based on what they were saying by this point. He threw a punch at Bubba, but he was quickly beaten down. There was an ECW chant as Bubba performed a Bubba bomb off the second rope through another table, and then Bubba asked one of the Uso brothers if they know who they are. We're the Dudley Boys, and we're the baddest tag team on the planet, he said. And JBL said he thinks not winning Tag Team of the Year upset the Dudley Boys. Screw you. Just stop with it. Just give it up with this damn, oh, he's mad because he didn't win the slammy crap. That's something for Miz, okay? Nothing wrong with it for Miz. There is something wrong with it for, oh, they're mad because they didn't win the award. When it's like, they're a meaningful tag team. They're doing a violent attack through tables because they didn't win a slammy award? Really? There better be more of an explanation than they're mad about they didn't win a slammy award. I like the turn. I like it a lot. I mean, I've been saying for some time that the Dudley should turn heel. Hell, I've been saying you can even turn the Usos. Just turn New Day. If you're not going to actually give them some real, you know, make them develop some real heat, and it's just going to be kind of fun-loving comedy stuff, where if they annoy you, then you boo them. If you like them, then you cheer them, and it's okay either way. Well, that's no good for anybody. They need real heels and real baby faces. I really believe that. And so I was all for turning one of them. Well, I chose the Dudleys, and I think this is good for the Dudleys, especially because they just... They were written off as a nostalgia act. They were scripted to be. And it's just, I think a lot of us were excited to see what they could bring to the WWE tag division, but the way they were positioned, they didn't have much of an impact, or nearly as much as they should. Now that they are heels, I'm hoping that that can change. And so I'm looking forward to this. They did air a Daniel Bryan video package after this. Kind of felt bad for the Dudleys and the Usos, because on most shows, this would be something that people would be buzzing about a little bit afterward. Might not be the biggest thing on the show. I think a lot of people almost forgot it happened by the time the Daniel Bryan segment was over. It's just kind of bad timing. I'm kind of surprised they didn't do this earlier in the night, because it was so overshadowed by the great Daniel Bryan segment that closed the show. And I did fail to mention it earlier. He said that he cut off his hair and beard for a charitable group called Wigs for Kids. And so I know people are already going to that site. Jake Barnett noted that the site had actually crashed at one point, or the donation area maybe. And so, yeah, I mean, definitely if that's, I know my girlfriend's family has worked with a group that does something similar. Somebody pointed out to me, though, that unlike the group that my girlfriend's family has dealt with, Wigs for Kids does not charge for the wigs. And so that's the big difference, and that's awesome. So by all means, Wigs for Kids, I think it's wigsforkids.org. Let me double check that. Yes, indeed, wigsforkids.org, if you are interested in making a donation, either, well, follically or financially. I'm sure they would be happy with both. And then, of course, it was that Daniel Bryan segment that I talked about at the top of the show. Again, I'm not going to recap at all. We're not going to spend time tonight talking about, you know, who he thanked, who he didn't thank, and really getting into, do I think he's going to wrestle elsewhere? I mean, I'll just say, I will address that and say, no, I didn't come out of this reading between the lines on anything he said at first glance. Maybe if I saw it again, I'd feel otherwise, but I don't think so. When he talked about having that, the most recent test done, I mean, that's going to seal his fate with WWE for sure, if it hadn't been already, but I think that sealed his fate in his own mind. And maybe I'll find out otherwise, but I did not come away from this thinking Daniel Bryan is retiring from WWE. Bryan Danielson is going to do something else. You know, he is going to wrestle elsewhere. I didn't come away from that. I didn't come out of this feeling that way. We'll find out tomorrow when I get together with Wade Keller of PWTorch.com what he thought of it. He and I will be taking your phone calls on the PW Torch Livecast at PWTorchLivecast.com. 4 p.m. Central, 5 Eastern. Your phone calls are welcome, and I am sure we'll be talking a lot about Daniel Bryan. So if you want to get into who was left out, you want to start analyzing some of those things, that's a great place to do it. We'll be happy to take your calls and address those and anything else you want to talk about during that show. In case you missed Monday's Daily All Access show, I did mention that Will Pruitt is probably most likely going to be absent from audio here for a week or two just because of some work commitments. So Jake Barnett and I are going to get together. Jake, the other half of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, he and I will get together on Wednesday for a brief update. Not even sure exactly what we'll talk about just yet. And then Thursday, Jake and I will get together for the .NET Weekly audio show, which is available exclusively to members. I will have live coverage of the Vince McMahon quarterly conference call call with George Berrios. They're releasing all their financial information on Thursday morning, along with the latest WWE Network subscriber count. So that is always very interesting. And then, so once that is all taken care of, Jake Barnett and I will get together a short time later and discuss all that, along with all the news of the week, as we do during the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which again is available exclusively for members. If you are interested in membership to ProWrestling.net, visit the main page. Once you're there, look for the sign up area on the right side, and you can sign up for 1 month for just $7.50. You want to bring that price down. There's a 6 month option that'll do it. You want to bring it down the most, go with the annual option, which brings that price down to an average of $5.50 per month. And the members heard my Q&A audio show earlier today. Normally they hear this, the Raw audio review, on Monday nights as a member exclusive. But again, given the circumstances, I wanted to get this available for everybody. I'll be back in usual form next week. You will hear my WWE Raw hit list. Don't worry, you can still check it out on the main page of ProWrestling.net this week. I'll have it up on Tuesday afternoon, later today, I guess I should be saying. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Take care.